I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. How secure is your vote after you leave the ballot box? With Russian hacking now accepted as fact by top U.S. security agencies, some voters may not feel safe about the whole system. Today, what two area election boards are doing with electronic, paper, and absentee ballots to make sure your yays and nays stay yours. Then, meet the Park University pianist who brought home the silver from the 2017 Clyburn competition. We'll ask how he withstood the challenges of the weeks-long contest and listen to some of his award-winning performances. After that, we'll wrap things up with State House Blend. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. With Russian hacking now accepted as fact by the top U.S. security agencies, how safe are the votes cast in the KC Metro? It's a good time to ask. Voters on both sides of the state line head to the polls again in just a few weeks. Now, a conversation about just how secure our votes are. With us is Ronnie Metzger. He's a Johnson County Election Commissioner. Ronnie, good to have you here. Welcome.
It's good to be with you again, Steve. Thank you.
On the phone is Casey Martin. He's chair of the Kansas City Board of Election Commissioners. Casey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having us.
You know, there are a lot of people out there, Ronnie, who have grave doubts these days about how safe the vote is. We'll get into the details of your systems in just a little bit here. But what kind of response do you give people who come up to you and express their doubts?
Well, our systems are all very secure, and we actually get into the depth of this matter on our website that people can read it, study it, understand it, and then ask further questions. We wouldn't have near the time today to talk about all of the detail of the security of what we do to protect the vote and to maintain the integrity of the process and also to maintain the confidence of the voter that it is so.
Casey, how would you answer that question?
Sure. I think an important place to start is to think about the people who are actually administering these elections. These are your friends and your neighbors. These are, at the Kansas City Election Board, these are bipartisan teams from our board all the way down to election judges on election day. These are folks who are committed to the process, to the system, to doing a good job, and they're professionals who are committed to that. And knowing that you have your friends and neighbors who are there at the election board on election day and then thereafter counting your votes, sometimes we forget that it is a big system, but at the end of the day, it's our fellow citizens who are running the show.
Ronnie, what aspect of this entire process of voting and then tabulating the vote do you worry about the most?
Well, I think, we have a system of voting equipment that has stood the test of time. It's been in place since 2002, and we're currently looking forward to replacing that fleet of 2,407 voting machines as soon as we're able to identify the right system for Johnson County that has all of the necessary elements that we have on our spec sheet. And so we're not really concerned about our current fleet, but we're just concerned about the overall system. And we had a little bump in the road this last time that we've begun the process of exhaustively looking at what is there. But I don't really have any major concerns because we stand on the shoulders of a very, very staid history of integrity of elections within Johnson County.
But I was going to say, Ronnie, your machines came along in 2002, as you just mentioned. That's not that old on one level, but on another, they came along before computing systems were as sophisticated as they are today. And I'm wondering, is that a valid point, and is that a point of concern?
I don't believe so. Our systems are not connected to the internet in any way. We don't transfer data via a modem or the internet or any kind of network. In fact, our machines won't even hook up to the internet if you tried to hook them up. Our tabulation software is completely isolated on standalone servers that are not connected to any other internet except for the card readers and the printer, a monitor and a keyboard. It's an exclusive closed cell system. And so there's really no way to hack that.
You mentioned a bump in the road a few minutes ago. What was that?
Well, we had a system, a tabulation system meltdown, if you wanted to call it that, in the middle of the tabulation process at about 8 p.m., 10 p.m., somewhere in there. We last had a solid backup at 8 p.m., and when we noticed that we had a problem, we stopped, tried to assess, and tried to recover the data that was lost. And keep in mind, I didn't say we lost votes. The ballots were laying right there on the table. It's just that the data that was dumped in didn't record the tally. And we knew that right at that very moment. And so it took us about 3 hours to determine we could not restore it. So then we went to the latest backup at 8 p.m. And then eventually the next day, we finally came out with the tally. And we were totally convinced that everything that we did was absolutely accurate. It just took us a lot longer than any other time that we've done this.
And just one more point before about Johnson County, before I move over to Jackson. You guys use touchscreen voting machines, Ronnie, and there is a paper trail here, and that's regarded by election experts as a key ingredient to ensuring the integrity of the vote. Am I seeing that correctly?
There's not a paper trail in the sense of what the industry standard is moving to as we move forward in our land across the country. There is a tape that is that comes out of each machine, but in the sense of having a batch of ballots that can be run through the scanner again on paper and recreate the election for that machine or that polling place, we don't have that at this time.
Casey Martin, again, chairman of the Kansas City Board of Election Commissioners. What voting systems are in place in Jackson County and here in Kansas City, Casey?
So in Kansas City, we still, you know, the majority of people still use a paper ballot. And we do have the touchscreen voting machines that are accessible for those with disabilities or anyone else who wants to use those machines. I suspect they're pretty similar to what Ronnie has in Johnson County currently, and we're in the process of evaluating proposals for new machines in the Kansas City Election Board jurisdiction. And those machines will, you know, we've got the proposals. We're going through that process that Ronnie described of evaluating the proposals and the different types of machines. And getting back to that paper trail, we currently also have the machines that create a tape. Mm-hmm. You might have seen on the side of the machine, it kind of rolls up into one of those old school receipt tape things that are always fun to deal with. The new machines have the ability to actually print a ballot from that touchscreen device. So the voter can look at it, check it, say, yes, that's exactly what I voted for, and then run it through the scanning machine, just like every other ballot. So if there is an issue that with data that is failing to upload properly at some point, we always have those ballots that can run back through the system and recreate the election, like Ronnie suggested, to make sure that if there is some sort of abnormality, there's always that paper trail, always that ballot that was either actually marked by the voter or marked by the machine that we can look at and say, okay, here's what the intent of that voter was in this election.
And that's the system you're hoping to get. Do I understand correctly?
That's correct.
Yeah. If our listeners want to join our conversation here, questions about how secure their votes are in the Kansas City Metro, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Why do you guys stick with paper ballots, Casey? What's the thinking there?
Well, I think the current thinking is that they are still less susceptible to you know, the popular word is hacks right now. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get in there and hack somebody's paper ballot. If we moved over to a fully digital system, until we are assured that there is enough data security there to protect the data that is collected through the election process, then I think we want to keep that paper trail available for recounts, for that check and balance on the results of the election.
And when you guys say paper ballots, describe the ballot that you use, Casey.
So it's just like the Scantron that anybody who's sat for a standardized test would see, bubble in the bubble next to the name or the response to the petition initiative that you like, and then run it through the machine.
Okay, Ronnie, this Russian hacking scandal has a lot of people nervous. Have you guys been had to take any steps to prevent hacking in Johnson County, or is it simply not connected at all?
It's not able to be. There's no hacking that is able to be done because our systems are not connected to anything. And so the only other way that someone could get involved in mischief would be to get into our warehouse where the machines are. And we're completely protected with several alarms and scan cards, where the only individuals that can get in where those machines are people who are authorized to do so.
I was going to say, just again, looking at your website, these machines are protected sort of like Fort Knox protects money, or maybe not quite that far, but down that road, right?
Exactly. And I have actually opened up the door a bit. I take people on tours to let them see how the machines are stored, how they're kept secure, and obviously transparency is important. The voters need to know how secure their equipment is, how secure their voter registration list is, how secure the process is, and then they need to also weigh carefully the integrity of the people who are running the election. And I start with myself, our staff of 16, and then the 51 election workers that we commissioned during the presidential election. These are our neighbors and our family and our friends.
Yeah. Casey, I'm really struck by the fact that both you and Ronnie Metzger have indicated here that you're looking at new systems. If the two of you are looking at new systems, can I discern from that maybe there are hundreds of elections officials across the country looking at new systems right now?
I believe you can. You know, it goes back to the 2000 presidential election, and then the hanging chads and the irregularities in Florida and elsewhere. Congress passed the Help America Vote Act that established new guidelines for election equipment and processes, and then allocated funds for election authorities to purchase new equipment and make sure that equipment met the new guidelines. And it's been, what, maybe 15 years since HAVA, Help America Vote Act, was passed. So all the election equipment that was purchased after that was passed is now, you know, closing in on being obsolete. You know, we have the situation where we have difficulty finding parts to fix the equipment that we have. The companies that initially manufactured these systems are not necessarily still in business or have been merged into other entities. So it's time. It's time to replace for election authorities across the nation. And it's not something that's fun to buy for a city council or for a county legislature or taxpayers in general. You know, it's kind of like buying a new air conditioner. It's not fun, but you really like what it does for you after you buy it. So I think, you know, it would be nice to see the federal government or the state legislature is looking at this as a real issue for election authorities across the state and the nation, and think about how we can help fund some of that upgrade to our system.
Ronnie Metzger in Johnson County, Kansas, how much money are you looking at perhaps here to buy a new system?
Our Board of County Commissioners already last year allocated $13.1 million for a new voting system, a new fleet of voting machines.
So the money's already been appropriated.
Absolutely. And it's renewed in the new budget for 18 as well. And so the funding is there. We're simply waiting to match up our voting culture in Johnson County with the right equipment that will stand the test of time for the next 12 to 15 years, because as you look at our history, we purchase a new fleet of voting machines about every 12 to 15 years, and we want to make sure that we are wise stewards of the taxpayer funds.
In Jackson County or in Kansas City, Missouri, Casey, how much money would a new system cost?
Well, we're looking right now. You know, we have a smaller number of registered voters under the Kansas City Election Board jurisdiction than Ronnie does in Johnson County. And you know, we're looking probably in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 million when we're looking at what we're going to purchase.
Right.
And we have kind of an interesting situation at the Kansas City Election Board where we're funded half by the city of Kansas City and half by Jackson County. So we get to go talk to both entities when we're looking to upgrade our election equipment. And they've been very helpful and very interested in making sure that we have the right equipment for our voters. And like Ronnie said, that it matches up with what we're used to, but also provides additional security and ease of access that can make our elections freer, fairer, and more efficient.
How safe is the vote? That's our topic for this segment. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Ray from Olathe. Ray, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, I work with computer systems for 30 years, and a little bit ago I heard the guest from Johnson County refer to a common misconception. The misconception is that if my computer is not connected physically by cable to the internet, then I'm safe. In the industry, we call that the false sense of security of the air gap, thinking that if I'm not connected to the internet, I'm safe. I'm a strong believer that we still need to have paper ballots coming out because a hacker can get in with flash drives behind the scene and implement bugs that could mess up a vote and that could disrupt the vote, not actually change an individual person, but disrupt the tallies that are created at the end of the day.
And Ray, if I'm understanding you correctly, that person who'd want to do that to the vote would have to physically get close to the machines to insert that flash drive?
Correct.
Okay, Ronnie,
it's not the individual voter. It's not that an individual voter can go up to a voting booth and plug into a flash drive. I'm sure there's protections against that.
Right.
It'd have to be behind the scene.
Ronnie, talk to us about Ray's concern here.
Exactly. We have we have dual entry access. In other words, a single person never goes into the gym's room where we do the tabulation. We have all kinds of safeguards like that to protect the physical property. And so while I agree with the concept of what you're talking about, we have taken measures that have been in place for a number of years, and we're also looking at additional measures. We just worked with our sheriff on implementing additional measures because the intensity on this topic is raised right now over the last 6 or 8 months that this has been a topic in the common media. And so we are taking additional measures as well. So I agree with the concept, but we have already taken those protections.
You know, a question from a listener here. How well vetted are election workers then, Ronnie, who have access to the votes and the voting machines and the computer systems here?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that question.
How well vetted are your election workers who have access to the machines?
They are scanned into security systems by the sheriff. So every one of our workers, as well as our election workers, are tested for certain security measures. And I'm not sure that I should take the liberty to talk specifically what is done, but we have been working directly with our sheriff's department to make sure that we don't have even one bad actor within our system of personnel.
Casey, in Kansas City, Missouri, how do you guys handle this idea of vetting election workers?
Well, we just go out of our way to hire the best and brightest available that are committed to the process of promoting democracy in Kansas City. We have a great staff.
Are they vetted by law enforcement?
I believe so. I believe we do standard background checks that you would do for most employment screening processes. And I know that we've got some great people down there. We haven't had any issues with any kind of criminal activity in our group at all.
You know, Ronnie, this idea again that both Johnson County and Kansas City, Missouri, are looking for new systems. I'm just guessing that in the marketplace out there, there are lots of options, dozens of options, or not.
Surprisingly enough, there are very few options.
Oh, is that right?
Compared to the marketplace and how huge this marketplace is, keeping in mind HAVA was passed in 2002, and so all of those systems are now aging out, as Casey said a minute ago, and so there are many, many, many jurisdictions looking to replace their aging fleet, and there's a surprisingly small pool of equipment, that has been certified by the EAC and by our Kansas State
EAC being the Election
Assistance Commission.
At the federal government.
That's true. And that's the organization that was formed coming out of the debacle of the 2000 election in Florida.
And Ronnie, when you say there are surprisingly few systems out there that have been certified, how many are you talking about?
Six, seven, eight, nine for us in Kansas.
Yeah.
Not really that many. And we have a certain culture within our county. Our voters have come to expect to vote on a machine. Since 1988, the voters voted to actually implement a voting machine. And so go back that many years, we have not voted on paper.
Okay. Back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Thomas from Kansas City, Missouri. Thomas, you're on Up to Date as we talk about our vote safe.
Good morning.
Good morning. Are you there, Thomas? Why don't you try and give us a call back? Let me go to Philip from Lawrence. Philip, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, this is Philip, and I've actually gotten to be one of those local supervising judges for the last 10 years.
Yeah, good for you.
I just wanted to say that if anybody, it's a wonderful, fun time, and if anybody wants to better know the election system and have more confidence in it, I think they should become one of those local poll workers and be part of the process.
What struck you about the process that makes you feel pretty good about it, Philip?
I just, it sounds dorky, but I love democracy. I'm a government teacher. And I like seeing not the talking heads, not the, you know, politics part of it, but the pure democracy, getting to help somebody at the local level have their say in how our government works.
Okay. That's good to hear. I appreciate your call, Philip.
Thank you.
Let's go to Thomas from Kansas City, Missouri. Thomas, you're back. Good morning.
Good morning. In the 80s, there was an article in the New Yorker that predicted the problems with electronic voting machines, and it made the point that the old voting machines that people may remember that had the levers and they were the booths, the big metal things,
right,
they're actually very secure and great machines and tamper proof. The only problem was it was expensive to store. It seems to me that there's always going to be a problem with electronic votes, and why don't we go back to those machines?
Casey Martin from Kansas City, why don't you take that one?
Sure, and they paper is pretty safe and it's secure. I think one thing to think about when we look at voting machines and moving toward more opportunity for electronic voting is that it makes the system and the process much more accessible to the wider population. Not everybody has the ease of access to get off of work at a certain time during election day to go vote. Mm-hmm. It's everybody's obligation to do that as a citizen. But I think if we can keep moving the ball forward to increasing accessibility and giving people more options to cast their ballot in a safe and secure way, I think we should look at that. I think we should keep moving in that direction in a slow, methodical way that allows us to address the security issue. But I think we shouldn't just throw it out to say electronic voting is never going to be safe, so we should stick with, you know, the old school methods. It's part of our life now that we're all connected, we're all on social media, we're all using the internet to do almost everything in our daily lives. And I think voting will follow that track at some point,
right,
as long as we have that verification process and security that's there to protect it.
Ronnie Metzger from Johnson County. I'm wondering if one of the issues here is it slower? Does it take more time to count paper ballots than the screens that you guys use in Johnson County? And is that one factor in all of this?
Our big problem that we had in November of 16 stemmed from the paper ballots from the mail ballots that came in. And yes, there are faster scanning systems than we currently have in our system. But we hope that when we move to the new generation of voting machines, we'll have one of those high-speed scanners to solve that problem.
Because on election night, Casey, you guys are under pressure to produce results relatively quickly, aren't you? Because the media is wanting results, the candidates are wanting results, the public is wanting the results.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can mostly blame that on you, Steve.
Thanks, Casey.
And the crew of the AP reporters and anyone else who's standing outside the tabulation room waiting for results. And yeah, that is a pressing need. We want to get things done quickly. Electronic, the ability to scan the ballots into an electronic card that then has those numbers available so that we can process it through our system at the election board and get those numbers out quickly is definitely an aspect of the electronic process that is nice.
Yeah.
What I think we're seeing as we look at new equipment is that there are paper ballot sorting machines and scanning machines that can actually scan the ballot, keep an image of it, and allow us to go back and recreate elections and adjudicate ballots and determine voter intent through a scanned image of the ballot while we still have that paper backup if we ever need a recount. So I think there are companies out there and there are processes out there that allow us to be quick, efficient,
right,
and safe all at the same time.
These new generation machines you're talking about.
Exactly.
Right. Jan from Kansas City North, you're on Up to Date, Jan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like what the guy was just saying there about the newer generation, but I really appreciate here in Clay County that we do still have the paper ballot. You know, I think it's the OptiScan, and you scan it, scans and all that, but it keeps the paper ballot in there for backup, because until we get all of our bugs worked out on the electronic systems, you know, we've got to keep some paper for backup for verification.
Right.
And I did use the horrible old punch Chad system in Ohio, and it was terrible. So I think that's pretty much gone away. I hope it has gone away everywhere, but the OptiScan that we have now does work well, and I like having the paper. We've got to have some paper backup. That's all.
Jan, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye. All right. Ronnie, you both have elections coming up August 8th in Jackson County, Missouri, August 1st in Johnson County, Kansas. What will voters have to present on Election Day to cast their ballot without having to worry about a provisional ballot?
In Johnson County, all they need to do is present their photo ID. Most people use their driver's license or a state-issued voter ID or just a photo ID. You can also use a number of other documents. It's the list is on our website, but the two most popular, driver's license and a passport.
How about on the Missouri side, Casey?
Well, this is our first election with the voter ID requirement.
Right.
The Kansas City Star did a nice job of laying out what's necessary in an editorial today, but I suspect that we'll be dealing with or seeing mostly Missouri driver's license and passports. I wish it wasn't something that we were dealing with, but we'll be there in handling questions and trying to help people work through this new hurdle that they have to jump over to cast a ballot in Missouri. And we're doing all we can to
right,
educate voters and make sure that they are ready to go on Election Day.
Real quickly, Ronnie.
We have advanced voting that's available. They can get the hours right off of our website. 60% of the people who voted in the presidential election voted early in our 6 advanced voting sites. Every one of those are available again this time.
Ronnie Metzger is the Johnson County Election Commissioner. Casey Martin, Chairman of the Kansas City Board of Election Commissioners. Thank you both very much for your time. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk to the silver medalist from the recent Clyburn competition. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. That's Kenny Broberg playing Dvorak in the Clyburn competition. You know, this competition, Kenny, is just brutal. 2.5 weeks, 4 elimination rounds, millions around the globe watching. How do you handle something like that?
One step at a time, I guess. Like handling one performance at a time when you're getting ready. Like, just think about the next performance and then the next one. And so on.
So you are locked in when you're doing this. Just again,
basically all I did when I was in Fort Worth was practice.
Yeah, the pressure. How did you handle that part of it?
Well, I had a lot of good support from my teacher Stanislav Yudenich.
Yeah, and a gold medal winner, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and from my family and from all my other colleagues at Park University.
Mm-hmm. And that support came in what kinds of forms?
Oh, just like talking to my friends and my family and, you know, being able to tell them what I was thinking about how I was playing and sort of confiding in them and letting them help me.
Did you ever get in the middle of a piece and did your mind ever wander?
Yeah. In the list, not in the semifinal round, I just like lost concentration like halfway through because there was somebody coughing in the audience.
Oh, you're kidding!
Yeah, and they just kept coughing and they didn't leave. And but then I listened to the recording afterwards and it didn't really sound like I lost my concentration. So,
but you were bugged by it.
Yeah.
That's why someone like the great jazz pianist Keith Jarrett gets upset when someone talks or makes, you know, he'll stop the performance and say, "What's up?"
Yeah.
But you didn't have that.
Oh, no.
You didn't have that option, eh?
No.
Yeah. What about all those great pianists who are watching you? Does that unnerve you at all?
No, not really, because they've all done it before, so they kind of understand.
Yeah.
They kind of understand what you're trying to do and where you fail, and I mean, that's a normal part of creating art.
You know, preparing for this has been compared to an athlete preparing for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, how so?
Hours and hours of preparation every day. You know, I practice 5 to 6 hours a day. And this doesn't really change after the competition. I go back to doing the same thing because, you know, now I have concerts to play, which is even better.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I'm struck by the comparison to Olympic athletes because I read that before you would go on, you would do things like warm your fingers up with a hairdryer.
Yeah.
Or you had hand warmers stuffed somewhere and you would wrap your hands around the hand warmers.
Yeah.
Why? Maybe the obvious is to warm them up a little
bit? Yeah, just to warm them up. And I'm paranoid about getting on stage and my hands not being warm. You know, when you get nervous, your blood flows to your heart.
Yeah.
Your blood flows away from your extremities.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy for you to be really warmed up and then go out on stage and all of a sudden you don't feel like you're warm at all.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of pianists do that.
Wow. A story about you and the star suggested that your routine helped you get through it. And I'm wondering, what was that routine exactly?
I would get up early in the morning, which is not normal for me. I'm normally a night person. But during the Clyburn, I would get up early in the morning.
Like what time?
Like 8 o'clock. 9.
Oh, that's not early in the
morning. Oh, that's early for me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. I would, you know, especially because most performances are at night.
Okay.
So, you know, you get up early in the morning, you practice, take a nap, especially if there's a rehearsal. You go to the rehearsal and then you take a nap afterwards and then you listen back to the recording of yourself because that helps you hear what it sounds like from the audience out in the hall. And then just like the normal, you know, I like to eat a baked potato and make sure to get some protein, too, before I play. A lot of people don't like to eat right before they play because they're worried they're going to, like, throw up or something. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I need the energy.
How close to the competition would you actually be eating?
How close to the performance?
Yeah, to the performance, yeah.
Well, gee, I usually eat a banana, like, 10 minutes before I go on stage, backstage.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you took your naps during these days, could you actually fall asleep?
Oh, no.
No.
No, you're just, like, resting your eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the the singular challenge for you in terms of that when it comes to the technicalities of playing? Is there one hurdle that you've struggled to get past for years, Kenny, as you look back on it?
Not really. Is it for the competition? It's kind of it tests different things. You know, you have three solo rounds, and then you have chamber music, and then you have two concertos, and you have to react differently to all of those things. The solo is really actually kind of the easiest because you have more freedom to do whatever you want, to take time to rush, to anything, because you don't have to coordinate with the other musicians.
Yeah.
But when you get into the Mozart and Romantic Concerto and the chamber music, you have to think about what else is going on. You can't just be focused inward on yourself. So the chamber music, a lot of times you're just accompanying. And then the Mozart, I think, was the most challenging for me because it's a really big hall. Bass Hall is very big. It's a beautiful hall, mm-hmm. but it's very big.
Down in Fort Worth.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the orchestra is very big. And the particular concerto that I chose, K-503, is not the most common concerto. I was the only person. There were 12 Mozart concertos. I was the only person who played it. And, compared to six D minors, six people played the D minor, five people played the other C major. So the orchestra wasn't as familiar with it, and we had a little less time to put it together. So that was... I think that was probably the biggest challenge.
You know, listen, I don't know anything about playing the piano. It's always I'm just amazed by people who can do it. But watching you play last night in getting ready, you know, this notion that you might have a stronger right hand than a left hand, what struck me about watching you is both your hands are equally facile. You're playing, you know, what looked wildly with both hands. Mm-hmm. Do you have a strength? Is your right hand stronger than your left?
I don't really know.
Because almost everybody is stronger one way or the other. But
I'm sort of ambidextrous. Like, I can't write with my left hand. I write with my right hand. But like, I used to play baseball and I would bat left-handed and throw right-handed.
Wow.
I do think just because of the way piano repertoire is, I have different strengths in piano for different hands. Like, actually, my reach is a little bit larger in my left hand than my right hand, because I don't know, I guess I played more octaves, more like accompanying octaves with my left hand.
But you can't go into a competition like this with one hand, inferior to the other. That's not what this is, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
You've got to be almost equal in terms of...
Every pianist is.
Yeah, but that's fairly rare, though. I mean, you guys are rare people.
Yeah, well, we start from a young age.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, speaking of that, you started at age six.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What got you going on it?
My maternal grandparents gave my parents a piano for a wedding present. And so there was just, a little upright piano in the house. And they started lessons for my brother. I was just listening to my brother practice and just fell in love with it. And I wanted to do it myself. And it actually took several years of convincing for them to let me start taking piano lessons before I actually did.
Why were you so drawn to it?
I don't know. I just loved the sound and I felt comfortable with the piano and I loved just playing with it. It was like a toy, first. But also I loved the music. I felt a really strong emotional connection to the music right away, and I would listen to recordings that my parents would give me of great classical music and the great pianists, and I fell in love particularly with piano concertos. I love the idea of piano concertos, that it's kind of like a David and Goliath thing, like one against many.
That's a little unusual because your parents weren't players, if I understand correctly.
No, they wanted me to be good at math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were the first player to come out of your family.
Yeah. Well, my brother took piano lessons, too, but I'm the first professional musician.
Wow. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're visiting with Kenny Broberg from Park University. He just won the silver medal in the very prestigious Van Cliburn International Piano Competition down in Fort Worth. Let's listen to a little bit more of Kenny Broberg. This is him playing Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini. I'm watching you as we're listening to this, and you're playing this in your head all over again. You can't get away from it.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, when did you know you had a gift? At what point in your life did you think this is something special?
I'd never really thought about it. I just wanted to do it.
You just kept wanting to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to this competition, when you won the silver, what went through your mind?
Well, I was very happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you disappointed you didn't win the gold?
No, because you know, all the first three prizes they get a lot of help in their careers. I'm not envious of the gold at all. He has a lot of concerts to play, and it's very quick. It's a very quick turnaround, and I mean this is fine for me right now. It's the right thing at the right time in my life.
You know, did you have a sense you were near the top as you got down towards the end?
Yes.
Yeah. Based on what?
Based on how I was playing and the reactions I was getting from the crowd. And I felt like I had a good chance to get in the top three.
Can you go through and perform or compete in the Van Cliburn competition again, or is it a one-shot deal?
Well, I could, but I don't know of anybody that's gotten a top prize and has gone back and done it again.
Because you've been there, done that.
And you know, they don't need to. If you're getting concerts, then why compete?
You know, the Texas Classical Review described your performances as showing, and I'm quoting here, an imaginative shaping of themes, revelation of inner voices, and an unfailing sense of momentum. What do you think of that?
It's a very nice compliment.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah.
As you mentioned, you now have a schedule of concerts to perform. There's a recital tour in Hawaii, a return to your alma mater, which is the University of Houston, for its annual Texas Music Festival, and orchestra and recital engagements in Denver, New Orleans, West Palm Beach, and other cities across the U.S. Then there's Europe.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of all this?
It's super exciting.
Yeah. When do you start? When does it get going?
Well, I leave tomorrow for my first concert in New Orleans.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
With the orchestra down there?
Nope. Solo recital.
Yeah. And you prefer that? You were based on what you were saying before?
No, I don't necessarily prefer that. It's just a different animal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like doing everything.
After the competition, did your practicing drop off dramatically, or have you kept at it?
It dropped off for a little bit. I took a couple.
Gotta admit.
I went home. I saw my family. I met my niece for the first time, so that was nice. I got a little break. But now I'm back at it.
6 hours a day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Yep.
I think about what you do, and the word demanding just keeps going through my head. It sounds hard every day.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Yeah, it is. But I love it, and it's like it's a life calling. It's a vocation.
That's great. Well, Kenny Broberg, congratulations again. What a terrific achievement. You've made us all proud. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Kenny will be performing on Sunday, September 10th at the Folly Theater. The concert starts at 4. Tickets go on sale Tuesday, August 1st through the Folly Theater. They range in price from $20 to $50. That's Sunday, September 10th at the Folly Theater. And we'll go out with a little more Kenny Broberg. This is him playing Liszt. Tomorrow we check on the health of our highways and find out what you want in Kansas City's next police chief. Don't forget to send us your questions for the candidates for KCK mayor to update@kcur.org. That debate, 6:15 tomorrow evening at Donnelly College in KCK. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.